Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
Yo, Tornado, 2022.
And we have a big, heavy show for everybody tonight. We have the quiet man, who is hopefully not going to be too quiet, Gianni Ruiz, and AFO, American Fighting MMA. So I have to ask him about that. I have already met him a couple of times. Once at the Rocky Marciano ceremony there for the statue unveiling, and before that at Boston, where he came back in the Rocky Marciano booth. Big picture in front of the banner he's had there. So it'll be an exciting show here. And of course, Cap. Today's Bradley versus Marquez fight. It wasn't as exciting as many people thought it was going to be. It's fairly decent.
I heard Bradley was good. And I didn't read anything to that nature, but the one thing that did play a factor was the fact that, you know, he just outworked him. And one of the things that I could go into the fight was, could we see a chance of Marquez football not fighting him, you know, 2 months? And second of all, he finally conquered the mountain. He finally got the one that he was looking for. Could he, you know, maybe he doesn't have that passion anymore.
Everything was a little fuzzy today, Tony. I don't know if there's anything you can do on your end, or I should call you back.
You know?
It's still a little fuzzy. Let me try to call you right back.
Any better?
A little bit. So, the scores were a little weird in that fight.
I guess we have a trend of bad judging going on right now.
Yeah. I know.
One of the major fights that one judge being way off.
Right. Well, number one, nobody should have ever gave it to Marquez. Thought that was kind of weird, like somebody on the panel had just an automatic vote for him for some reason. Like, they weren't watching the fight, or it was pre-planned or something. But the other thing was, the other two scores for Bradley were very close compared to the scores, at least, that the announcers were talking about, and they posted throughout the fight, Bradley really ran away with it. I don't know whether it was just kind of revenge for the Manny Pacquiao decision or what, but they definitely made it closer than it should have been. Very strange there. And we have Psychic Tom on the line.
All right. How are we doing, guys?
We're doing good.
Yeah, how's my sound coming through? Am I sounding okay on this? Because it's been pretty fuzzy from my end with you guys.
What?
I can hear you fuzzy.
Listening,
okay,
it was
so
fuzzy?
Just a little, especially with Tony, and then you Rich, kept breaking up a bit. So sounds better now, though, so disregard. I guess we're doing better.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's a connection issue, but my speakers aren't the best on this computer, but it's got usually a better connection, so I'm kind of forced to use it. So, anyway, we got a lot to talk about. We got UFC 166 coming up this Saturday. The show will be the final fight between Cain Velasquez and Junior Dos Santos is going to take place here in the main event. I'm pretty sure Cain Velasquez is maybe not going to do a repeat of the last fight, but he's probably not going to lose that belt, from what I can see. Junior, I don't see his game improving all that much. I don't really see much that he could do to turn the tide here. And should be an entertaining fight either way.
I think it's just a fascinating question on was the problem with him really his physical condition and the shock that his body was under. And if that's not the case, you know, for sure we know what a puncher's chance he has. But every time we use that phrase, puncher's chance, that sort of implies that the odds are stacked against it. So I would guess Kane will pull out another decision. But we'll see. Anyone that can hit as hard as Junior, you never know.
Right. We will see. All right. So then we have co-main events, another heavyweight fight. Daniel Cormier, undefeated, as well, fighting Roy Nelson, 19-8. I know this is a bitter word between these two guys. Very tough rivalry there. Cormier has still been smack talking a little bit with John Jones, talking about moving down to light heavyweight. This fight, whether he can stay where he is or move down like he thinks he can.
In that fight, Cormier is an overwhelming favorite. I don't know if you guys have checked the odds on this. But it ranges anywhere from anywhere from -625 for Cormier. Can you imagine? And Nelson, the highest for him is +472. I can't imagine it being that one-sided. I mean, I see something like that, I'd almost be tempted to go with Nelson on this, because Nelson seems to lose when they think he's going to win, and then when the consensus is he's going to win, he comes up short. So, I don't know, but I just don't see the odds being that one-sided.
Yeah, I might have to call a buddy in Vegas and have him place a bet for me. We also have Gilbert Melendez, 1-3, fighting Diego Sanchez. Is this a rematch?
I don't believe they have fought before. But, this is another one that apparently the odds makers feel that the sun has really set on Diego's career. I'm looking at his odds, and we're looking at the highest there is +587. And Gilbert, one of the bookmakers has Gilbert -1250. That just seems so excessive, but.
That's definitely a good matchup. I mean, they both have pretty similar records. Diego has a few more losses, more to be exact. He's 24-5. Melendez is 24-8. But Melendez has spent the bulk of his career in strike force.
I think that Gilbert definitely has an edge in more big fight recent. I think he's been more active. I think he's fought the better competition in the past few years, but I just can't see Diego being that huge of an underdog unless there's something I haven't heard of.
And we have another guy, Carson Gabriel, 15-7, Sean Jordan, 15-4. Gonzaga, in his return from retirement, And we got a couple of Texas guys. Nate Marquardt was actually thrown out of the UFC at one point for his own issues. And went to Strikeforce and then came back when the UFC acquired Strikeforce. He's 32-12-2, and he's facing Hector Lombard, who's 32-4-1. Now, this could be an interesting one because either one of these guys could get thrown out with a bad decision again.
Yeah, this is potential fight of the night.
And, you know, so there's going to be a lot of pressure on both guys. Lombard's been really disappointing since he came over to the UFC, and he was going to dominate, and he's been kind of sketchy. So we'll see how he does here, but I think he's had a good shot here. Mark Clark has had way more than him, eight more losses in total. They don't both have the same amount of wins, of course. And obviously, Nate has faced a tougher test to see so far, but Lombard hasn't really been able to get much momentum at all since he got over to the UFC. He just looked really bad his first outing. So he's got a lot to prove. We'll see if he can do it. And then we have John Dodson back in action. He's 14-6, fighting Daryl Montague, who's 13-2. We got KJ Nunes, 11-7, fighting George Sotiropoulos, who's 14-5. And we have a battle of former tough contestants here. Tony Ferguson, who won his season of the Ultimate Fighter, he's 13-3, fighting Mike Rio, who's 9-2. His favorite move is the guillotine. He's got the majority of his wins pinch up. Also, we have TJ Waldberger, 16-7, fighting Aslan Amagov, who I've never heard of. 12-2 with one draw. Waldberger, 16-7. Sarah Kaufman versus Jessai is a pretty decent female fight on this card in the preliminaries here. Kaufman is 16-2, and Jessica I is 10-1.
Yeah, and I hope to get up to Strong Style within a week or so, and maybe we can get Jessica on because she indicated a willingness to come on the show last time. So I'll try to make that contact again.
Cool.
And see what we can do here because this is such a huge fight because Sarah, you know, coming off the defeat from Ronda, no disgrace there, but she's really under pressure, I'm sure, to get back on the winning track. And for Jessica, this is her first shot at the really big league. So, huge fight for both of them. And Jessica's a slight underdog, but you heard it here first. She's going to bring it home. Psychic Tom's crystal ball is lighting up. You heard it here first.
This is how everybody put the bets in.
That's it.
And we got a couple more here to talk about, or just at least mention. We have Philly, who's 12-1, fighting Jeremy Larson, 8-4. We got Dustin Haig, who's 11, fighting Kyoji Horiguchi, 11-1. And that's it. That's Saturday. 13 big fights there. From where is this fight? It's probably in Vegas. Nope, Jesus. Toyota Center. So hopefully that'll be the last hurrah there for Junior Dos Santos versus Cain Velasquez. But it just goes to show them all the heavyweight division really is, or at least how little talent there is in the heavyweight division in the U.S.
You know, that's interesting, Rich, you bring that up, because last night Junior and Cain were interviewed, and Cain was asked, do you think you would consider a fourth fight sometime down the road? And Cain did not rule it out. He says, well, you know, it just depends what happens, and there's a lot of other things that will happen between that. He said, maybe in another 5 years, who knows? And he was also asked about the quote from Junior that Cain hits like a girl. And he asked if that got under his skin. And Cain, you know, to his credit, he really stayed professional. Now, I'm not sure what he was thinking, but he answered it just like a true pro. He says, hey, you know, in a defeat, you try to take something positive out of it, and he didn't have a lot of good things happen to him that night, and he sort of just blew it off. And then there was also the possibility that was discussed that maybe Kane really had got under Kane's skin and he pulled an old Muhammad Ali trick of just beating him for five rounds, just carried him. So, ought to be interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely a great rivalry. I've enjoyed watching the fights. Just seems to me that Kane has got the secret now, and he's not gonna loosen his grip on this one on that belt. It's gonna be tough, Junior Dos Santos, to figure out any way. And I mean, you look at the way he adjusted Kane did to Antonio Silva. He didn't cut him up as bad in the second fight, but. He beat him pretty quickly. Same result, different fight. You don't have any problem dispatching Dos Santos again. But we got plenty more stories to cover. We got a little bit of news about George St. Pierre. Let's talk about him possibly retiring following UFC 167 in his fight with Johnny Hendricks. He kind of shot that down, actually, this week. But this is according to his trainer. He said he might retire. It's kind of odd because he's still talking about possibly following through with the Anderson Silva super fight. Well, that's not such a super fight anymore since Anderson Silva lost, but it still could happen. So that's another interesting story out there. Sad story this morning. Found out Tough Enough President Barry Meyer committed suicide to his brother, Vice President of Tough Enough Meyer. I went to at least one Tough Enough show out there in Vegas when I was out there, and I used to watch it on TV all the time out there, so I'm very familiar with the promotion, but I don't know, I haven't heard anything about it. This Barry Meyer guy, but I thought they were going pretty good, so I don't see what he was so depressed about, I guess. But it is what it is. It's one of those leagues that's been really instrumental to the UFC. Look at some of the alumni there. Rousey came from Tough Enough, John Fitch, Ryan Couture, and a few others. Definitely tough loss for MMA. But we'll see what happens. I guess, they're going to have to move on and see what else they can do down the line. Looks like it's a family business with the brother also involved, so hopefully he'll be able to pick up where his older brother left off. We'll see. Here's a crazy story on the female MMA front. Probably been watching the Ultimate Fighter. I just caught up with the a couple hours ago here. And this is a story about somebody who's already off the show, but Tonya Evinger is in the news. She called Misha Tate a disgusting bitch who continues to dig her own grave everywhere she goes. And that's not even the worst thing she said.
Yeah. It just keep going with this. It gets worse.
Yeah. That quote, according to the gals at Pro MMA Now Radio. Actually, Pro MMA Now, those guys, one of those guys got their start with us and fighting some Jack Ratcher. Did some UFC reports. Anyway, here's the Tonya's quote. She said, "Misha and I know each other real well. I hate the bitch, and she is secretly in love with me. I can tell just the way she leaves and all that shit. She can't leave me alone, you know what I mean? I know she has a big crush, but we're never getting together. I'm not into her. She's disgusting. No, I don't know. I don't care what she says. She's got her nose in everyone's business. So I'm up to say, since I hadn't even fought yet, already dropping her little seed in Dana's ear. I'm going to knee her in the cooter for that one. You know what her something really hot. I'm going to go crazy. I've been wanting to fight her for a long time. That would be a great fight. She's friends with one of my exes, so apparently she knows everything, a single thing about me. But she knows everything about everyone else, so maybe she digs her own grave everywhere. I've always not liked her, will continue to not like her, so she can say whatever she wants. So, that's just very
heavy
weird.
Words, Tom. Heavy words. Woo!
Yeah, now this is a funny part of the story, but it says just mentioned at the bottom, the last paragraph, it says, if nothing else, we at least know who she'll be rooting for, as in Tanya, when Cupcake, Kate's nickname, butts it with Ronda Rousey in their UFC 160 fight later this year in Las Vegas, Nevada, where shots to the cooter are still illegal.
I don't know why.
Anyway, I still have much more MMA stories, but for some reason this week I didn't put any boxing stories in the mix, or one, and even that has to do with MMA. Well, actually two of them. I got two boxing stories. Four out of like 10. So I'll just throw a boxing story in here, which also has to do with MMA. Former two-division world champion Ricardo El Matador Mayorga, officially 0-2, won no contest in mixed martial arts, as he lost a three-round split decision to Sergio Chico Keys, San Jose, Costa Rica. And this is interesting. He looked a little better with his strikes and groundwork, but he was controlled for the most part. And Ortiz used his legs when the two would square off on their feet. The fight was harder than I expected, and he even offered to have a rematch in Managua, Nicaragua. And, of course, Mayorga doesn't look any slimmer or trimmer. He's still a fat mess, I guess. didn't have problems making weight, I don't think, but...
Well, what weight division is he fighting at?
It's not mentioning the weight. But I think it's 160. And here's another boxing story. Boxing promoter Frank Maloney has announced his retirement after 30 years. He's apparently been contemplating this in July when one of his champion fighters, David Price, was beat for the second time in the space of 5 months, and that time was by Tony Thompson. And Maloney was thinking about retiring then, but stuck with it, and now he's second thoughts and finally decided to make a clean break. And he says, for the last year, I've gradually fallen out of love with boxing and my passion missing. I did much soul searching over the summer, and my heart is no longer in the sport I love so much.
Thank you for the photos.
Say that again, Tony. Right.
So I got a simple question for you guys. First of all, did anybody get Ring Magazine yesterday?
No.
Get Ring Magazine. You need to get it.
I'll pick it up tomorrow morning.
Okay. When you pick it up, I want you to go to the very back page and admire the picture of your co-host.
Okay, cool. All right.
And
yeah.
Actually, it's the picture I sent you a few months ago with Mel Tabella.
Cool.
Now, here's the other one. Here's the trivia question for you then. And it's going to segue perfectly into our interview tonight. Evander Holyfield. Did you guys hear of him?
Yeah, we've heard of him.
Evander Holyfield has fought seven hitters two or more times.
Seven fighters, more times.
Seven fighters, two or more times.
Well, I'll just do Mike Tyson. I don't know any of the other ones.
Unless I go to Fox, I can
cheat.
Don't cheat on Fox,
Rex. Tom, you got any more?
I really couldn't hear the question. The our connection's bad at Tony's end. It really was kind of like echoing. It was, who is, he fought three or more times, was it?
Evander Holyfield.
Evander Holyfield, who were the seven fighters he fought two or more times.
Okay. Well, I can, first one comes to my mind is our guest tonight, you know, but, okay, we've got it. And I'm looking at Tyson. What's throwing me off here is I'm thinking of his cruiserweight times, because I'm sure there's something back then too.
Only one in the cruiserweights.
Okay. Dwight Muhammad Quali, okay. And now let's go back to heavyweight. Okay, boy, this has got me going back in time now here. And of course, Riddick Bowe. I mean, I think that's pretty much in the Doug category.
That's three: Tyson, Johnny Rudy, and Riddick Bowe. I've got to come up with four more.
Okay. And I don't believe he had a rematch with Michael Moore. Correct me if I'm wrong.
You are indeed wrong.
Okay. Thanks, bud. Talk about dropping my left hand after a jab and catching a right in, huh? Bang. Let's keep going here.
He fought a rematch in 1997. Holyfield stopped him in eight rounds.
Oh, okay. And now let's keep going here. I don't think another former guest of ours had a rematch. I don't think Bobby Chez did. That was, I think, a one-time affair. Bobby Chez. Okay. Lennox Lewis.
Lennox Lewis is correct.
Okay. So we've got three more, and they're all at heavyweight, right?
Correct.
Okay, let's keep thinking here.
Actually, no, it should be two more. We got Lennox Lewis, Dwight Cowley, Mike Tyson, Riddick Bell, and Michael Moore.
Okay, so we've got, one of these is an overseas connection, isn't it? There's a European, okay, let's think overseas.
Not really.
No, okay, because I was thinking of, you know, something was calling me over there to... I was thinking of one of the big Russian, but I guess that was a one-time affair, too. All right, let's get back at it here. Foreman, but that was just a one-time affair. We should have seen that twice. Shannon Briggs.
Did they even fight once?
Yeah, I didn't even think they fought once now. Okay. Well, the wires are getting crossed here. tickling my brain, bud.
All right, you're tied off. Tony's going to have to reveal the final two to get Johnny Ruiz on.
Okay, Richard just got one.
I only got one, yeah.
So you just got another one.
Johnny Ruiz?
Johnny Ruiz.
Yeah, I already knew that. You hinted at that one.
But you didn't say it.
I did.
Oh. Well, then you should tell us and repeat it. John Ruiz, and the final one, Alex Stewart.
Alex Stewart.
And the only reason I remember that one is I was out with that their rematch in 1993.
All right. Let me try calling you back one more time, Tony, because you're still really faint. I don't know if there's any way you can turn the volume of your phone, but I'm going to call you back.
Any better?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so we're going to talk to Johnny Ruiz now. Oh, I'm hearing an echo. Somebody have their computer.
Hello?
Hello, John.
Yes. Hold on a minute. Hold on a minute. Hello?
Hey, how's it going?
You're good. I'm just at the sports bar watching the game, yeah.
Watching the Red Sox, right?
Yeah. Did you know when you book the guy that he's going to be watching the Red Sox in the playoffs?
Yeah, you know, I'm gonna be there for them and me.
I'm a Philly guy, so I know, you know, how crazy it gets. You know, towns like Boston and Philly, we take this stuff seriously.
Yeah, you know, we just, you know, not a terrible game for us, but.
Well, we just got the 1-0 lead. Same guy that hit the home run the other night. Last night. This is a replay. Anyway, John, I wanted to mention we also have the guy who was just talking. That was Tony the Tornado Penical, and we have Psychic Tom Padgett also.
Good evening, John.
How you doing?
Good.
How you doing?
And I'm sure we all got a lot of questions for you, but the number one thing on my mind is this AFO you just started, American Fighting Organization, bought out a promotion that had collapsed a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about how all that came about?
Yeah, it just happened to drop in our lap, actually. It was something that you know, we were thinking about doing MMA shows. They're doing a gym and method that does, we also have an MMA program. And the thing is that we're thinking about those, and we're thinking about starting an organization ourselves. All of a sudden, you know, AFO came up in the works. So, we managed to grab it up. And at the same time, instead of starting from scratch, we at least have something behind it now. You know, AFO has been around for quite a while in the New England area. So, you know, it'd be nice to keep it running. You know what I mean? It's keeping moving forward, so that's what we're trying to do right now.
All right. Did you get any ideas from Mike Tyson, or did you come up with
his
idea before he started his thing?
I'm sorry, it's coming out,
the
little baby.
Oh. Did you get any ideas on that from Mike Tyson on the promotional thing, or did you come up with the idea before he got started with it?
Yeah, definitely. We've been thinking about it for quite a while. My gym has been open for 2 years now. We've been doing MMA and also boxing, of course. I mean, and we're also toying with the idea at the very moment to
well, sooner or later we were thinking about doing some promotional fighting and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm glad he's doing well. I mean, after the bad, all the bad stuff, I'm glad he put all that bad stuff behind him.
Yeah, he's on top of the world right now. He's one of the most prized outside of boxing.
He's back. I mean, he was the man back then. Now, you know, he disappeared for a little while, and now he's back.
Quite the reinvention of himself. But, where did you get started with being interested in MMA? Because I always thought you were 100% boxing.
Well, I hate to say boxing is my passion. I mean, I love boxing, and when I opened the gym, for sure, it's a boxing. There's also kids to MMA, so we also do jiu-jitsu, the Muay Thai, you know, all of the other stuff that the MMA fighters need to learn to compete. And it's something that I like the fact of having a gym with a multi-fighting gym. That it just not specified for one thing, you know, we manage to cater to everyone.
And what do you enjoy most about the fight game?
Just the one-on-one thing. I mean, it's just you alone in that you'll be in the ring, the cage, whatever it is, and you're there, and you only have yourself to depend on. And I think that's where I fell in love with it. I mean, you have no one to blame but yourself if things go wrong. So, you know, you go out there, you fight, you give it your best, you win some, and then...
Well, it's interesting. We actually have met before a couple times. You probably don't remember me, of course, but one time it was in Boston at the Roxy, and the other time was at the Rocky Marciano statue dedication there.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And,
that was a while back ago, yeah.
The time at the Roxy, I was actually at the Rocky Marciano Foundation booth there selling T-shirts. We came behind the present picture with... my book there.
You're right, actually. I do remember, actually. Let me go and be taking a photo with the shirt and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was the photographer.
Oh.
So tell us a little bit about your basically for Rocky's legacy and his story.
Rocky, man, he's big thing around the world, of course, but he's definitely a big thing in New England. You know, he's a god over here in New England. So he did, you know, he's like, let's say he's the type of guy that basically he did the best of what he had. I mean, he was a strong guy. He went out there and fought his heart out, and that's what he did have. He had a lot of heart. And he won a lot of fights that way, and that's the reason why people love him. I mean, because, you know, he seemed like the working, that just basically he didn't have all the time in the world, but he basically came out there and did what he needed to do to win fights.
Yeah, a lot of good discussions with people who knew him and his family out there in Brockton when I was working with the foundation. And right here, I've done a lot of interviews. I actually have Rocky49wins.com registered, and there's a site set up there that I created. So I'm a big fan of his, and I a little bit about his trainer, Ali Colombo. But the thing that always makes me just totally respect the guy is the fact that he did it all and won all those fights, and most of the weight in between like 185 and 189. That could never
happen. Yeah, you're right.
That would never happen again.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. I said back in, you know, they weren't weighing what they weigh now. I mean, like 250 pounds. You know, back then it was like 190, you know, and about 185.
Right. Now, John, don't let Rich gloss over how he got that gig with the Marciano Foundation. It was the Philadelphia guy that got him that gig.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, I was coming for the first time. I was taking my dad to see a game at Fenway Park, I'm a Philly guy, and they weren't playing the Phillies, so of course I'm not going to wear anything Phillies. And I turned to my dad and said, hey, let's get the Rocky Marciano shirts and wear them there. And he goes, we're leaving in a week. Where are you going to find them? I said, we'll look at something. And I went online, went on Cruiser, and typed in Rocky Marciano t-shirt, beautiful one, the very same one that, you know, Rich was selling to do. I said, man, that's a beautiful shirt. I wonder if I can get it in a week. And I played the phone call, and it was Rocky's nephew. And so, of course, I start schmoozing. And as we all know, Rocky won the heavyweight title in Philadelphia. My uncle was at that fight. And the program has since come to me. So I went down, snapped a few digital photos of the program and the ticket stub, some newspaper articles that he'd given me. And then I sent them to his nephew, Dennis. And Dennis started, you know, talking to me and got me my T-shirts. And last year, he personally invited me to come up from Philly for the statue. My dad and I leveled up at 3 in the morning to come up there for it. And I actually got a really good photo of you. I was in the stand when they were introducing all the fighters on there in attendance. And they introduced you and you stood up and you gave a wave. I got the perfect shot of you doing that.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was a great moment for Rocky himself. He hit that statue. You know, it's well-deserved. I mean, like I said, he conquered the world, and he deserved it. He deserved what they, that day was a special day for him.
Yeah, what a beautiful day.
Yeah, here's what I'll do. I'll send what I have to Rich, and Rich can forward it. But I also took all my photos from them, and I had put them into a music video, just like they did at the end of Rocky V. And they were doing all the photos with the song. So I did that with all the photos from that, which, of course, you're included in. So I will send Rich that picture and a link to that video, and he'll send it to you, and those are, you know, free for you to keep.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, no problem.
Now, John, who was the toughest guy you ever fought, if you had to pick one?
Of course. I mean, I always say the man himself, Holyfield. I mean, so, you know, he came to fight no matter what. He brought everything. I mean, he brought his head, elbows, you know. If he could throw a kick, he was throwing a kick, too. You know, he definitely came to fight. So that's the reason why I respect him, hate him for that reason. But, of course, with the, you know, Tyson fights, you know, that's what frustrated him the most with all that dirty tactic that Holyfield does it. But sometimes he's a fighter and he's a winner. I mean, so you got to bring everything to the table when you're in a fight.
Well, we got to give you credit. He didn't bite his ear off like Tyson did. So.
I could have been up with the part two.
And
I could have been on tour right now with Tyson on tour. You know, the two men have bit on Holyfield's ear.
John accomplished something else Mike Tyson didn't do, and very few others did. Very few others have been able to. He's one of the few men to put Holyfield on the canvas.
Oh, he's, like I said, he's a great fighter. He's a great champion. You know, to say that what is his finale of his career in a way that how he's still playing. You know, he still wants to fight and actually he's still fighting tonight. I mean, I know the last time I heard he was like fighting like a year ago, but
yeah,
then again,
it's been flip flopping on whether he's going to retire or not. Still says he wants the championship fight. He actually announced his retirement and then went back on it, but he hasn't been able to get it. Nobody wants to fight him, and it's not because they're afraid of him. It's because they don't want to hurt him. It's just kind of sad, but
yeah, the guy was the man at his time, and you know, it's sad. It's sometimes it's, you know, especially in this boxing world, not too many people know when to say when. You know, that's the sad part. I mean, he had it all. He had the world in his palm of his hands, and all of a sudden, you know, it appeared on him.
Well, John, another guy I want to ask you about fighting, and I'm going to bring this one up because a close personal friend of mine from Philadelphia also fought this guy. And you had two fights, real close fights, a little bit controversial losses to Nikolai Valiyev, the 7-foot, I think, 7'2". 320-some-pound Russian fighter. what was it like to be in there with a guy that absolutely humongous?
You say it's something that it's like having jolly the time, basically. I mean, it's just something. I look at the photos now, and I think, and I look at them, and wow, he was that tough. You know, you never think about it when you're in the verge of a fight. You never think about it, especially you just wanted to go out there and fight. You know, most of the time when the guys, they come up to me, and they start making like a joke about it, where, you know, we are King Pauly.
Yeah.
And you know the part where he's playing basketball with that guy, and the guy's all hairy, and...
Yeah.
the guy is 7'2" and he's all hairy, and basically people basically make a crack joke about that. You know what I mean? So, and the movie comes to play, the long game part of the movie. Oh, you know. So, but it was two fights that basically I thought it was one of the easy fights I had in my career, because I felt good, I felt strong, and I thought I won the fight. And all something, I mean, like anything else, you know. It is boxing. You never know until they raise their hand.
Right, exactly. And you figure, this place, I'm looking at it all now on BoxRec, and you're out weighed close to 90 pounds there. I mean...
Yeah, he's... Yeah, I think he was, 90 pounds. Hello?
I was saying, even in heavyweight, Bob, that's a big change.
Oh, it is, it is. I mean, that's the craziness about the heavyweight division. I mean, you can play someone 2 pounds away to 100 pounds away. I mean, so that's what makes heavyweight exciting.
They needed a super heavyweight division for him.
Yeah.
I remember I used to joke about him all the time, though, like when he was had a fight coming up and we'd be talking about it. And, you know, I used to say he had like a bearskin rug for chest hair. And the fighters didn't know how to push him off, you know, so he would hug a lot. And I always wondered whether that was like sandpaper grating against your face as a guy who was going against him, you know.
He was a character on his own. I mean, he definitely was more of a sideshow than it was, you know. I felt good against them, and I felt like I won the fight, but then again, they were looking for someone else other than me to be a winner.
Exactly. Well, I'll tell you what was funny. This guy, he's a friend of mine. I don't know if you can even give him a name. He was a boxing heavyweight back in the 90s and early 2000s. Daryl Jedi Nobles from Philadelphia.
Hello. It's like you're coming in the neck of my man. I can't quite hear you too well.
Is this any better?
I can hear you a little better.
Okay. I was saying a gentleman I trained with back in the 90s, Gerald Jedi Nobles, heavyweight, made it to the top 10, fought on the Jones-Tarver undercard one time. And right after that, he went over to Germany to fight Valuev, and he came back and told me, and I remember seeing that, a lot of fighters will tell you, oh, I won that fight. I got ripped off. And I remember pulling over a neutral party that was over there helping out. And he goes, no, he really got ripped off. And now Gerald, who was about 5 or 6 inches taller than I was, in a sparring session hit me with low blows. Well, I'm 5'8". Now, you know, if he's fighting the guy 7'2", he's going to hit him with low blows. And I remember finally seeing the fight on YouTube, and everybody kept saying, Gerald was winning the fight, and he was questionably disqualified for low blows, and that's what happened. It was like the one time he hit him with like a left hook to the head, and I remember even like the referee kind of pushing him off, and you just know the home cooking over there sometimes ain't too tasty for the out of towners.
Yeah, you know when things are going wrong. As soon as the referee starts doing things it's just something that you know right off the bat. At the same time, when you're traveling to another country, you know, we all have a saying that, you know, you're going somewhere else, you're going there to lose. So, you know, so the thing is that, like, you know, it's like here in the United States, too. If you're from Philly, you're going to Boston to fight, you know, you're not bringing you here. Do not bring you to Boston to win. you know, they're hoping they're going to give you, you know, if it goes to position, of course you're going to give it to the hometown guy. You have to knock the guy out, and he's knocked the guy at least twice to get at least to get the split decision.
Yeah. I know, like, in some fights, you feel like you might knock the guy out. He's unconscious on the ground. They're still raising his hand.
Yeah, yeah. Damn, there's no shame in this game somehow.
Now, obviously, there's been a lot of controversial decisions, major fights over the last couple of years here in boxing. What do you think they can do to fix that problem?
You know what? It's been boxing been around. Boxing been around such a long time, it's forever. So, you know, if they haven't fixed the problem yet, I don't think they're ever going to fix it.
Okay, but what would you do as a promoter of marketing and MMA to try to improve both sports?
Well, the whole thing is it's always for the commissioners to basically judge each other.
Right.
That's where the problem begins. If they don't judge each other, then basically it's a free-for-all. You know what I mean? Because they're the ones who basically... They're the ones running the show in a way, and at the same time judging the fights. And if they decide to basically start raiding some of these judges, some of these referees, then of course you probably get a more of a better crowd, a better people in those positions.
Well, it's kind of sad to me that there's absolutely no recourse in a situation where a fighter is obviously robbed. You look at this.
Let's put it like this. If you're Mayweather, right? You're Mayweather, and coming up, and of course, you get to choose the one or two judges to judge your fight. Of course, the judges that are basically looking for you every single time you fight, and they show like they're basically supporting you, then of course you're gonna select that judge for that fight, and of course that judge trying to make the money for judging that fight.
Right.
So basically, you know, that's what the problem is. I mean, so, you know, because some of these judges, they show such dedication to some of these fighters that, and these fighters like noticing that they always hire them, always hire the same guys all the time.
Right. Now, what would you say was your best moment in the sport?
Yeah, you know, you always got to say when you win the heavyweight title. I mean, you can't get better than that. You know, that was the moment of a dream coming true. And that I could, no matter who asked me how I felt that day, I can never put it into words.
Cool.
What was it like, we were talking about Rocky Marciano earlier in the show, that feeling when you were holding on to that belt and realizing that was the same belt that you once wore?
I'm sorry. What was that again?
And we were talking about Rocky Marciano a little bit ago. What was that feeling when you're holding on that belt and looking at it?
Like I said, it was like an explosion. I mean, all these feelings come out. And, you know, you work so hard all your life to accomplish that, and you don't even know what you're feeling, but you're feeling excited.
Now, obviously, we haven't had an American heavyweight in so long get a championship belt. What do you think we can do about that? Is there anything that can be done to get these Russians away from the belts, or?
It's time to bring some of these fights back home. I mean, because all these fights have been going overseas, you know, and at the same time, I mean, it was the last time they had a heavyweight title fight here in the United States.
That's a good point. Yeah. It's been a while. They keep the belts over there, but they keep their fights over there.
Well, as soon as the European, the Euro dollar came into play, That's when everything got transformed from the fights being in the USA to the fights being in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Now, are you working on developing any heavyweight your own, the AFO?
Right now, he's working with a bunch of amateurs. You never know who has potential until they start getting into these fights and actually showing us that he could be the next champion. I mean, so, you know, half the time you get, these guys work hard at the gym, but come fight time, you know, the numbers show up. But most of the time you get, you know, it's all about fighting in these shows. It's going to show not only the trainers, but show the public that this guy's a real deal. So right now we're just working with kids right now and trying to make them be better, you know, prolong their career, you know, make their career a lot better. And hopefully things will work out good for them, Mary.
And what about events? You got anything planned for big events yet, or is that still in the works?
Right now we're putting in the works probably in January, do something in January for the MMA side and put some fights together. And hopefully in boxing, we want to do some boxing stuff too around the – we're going to start next year, you know, get our T's crossed and our eyes dotted, because we're, like I said, we're new to this and we're just trying to make it better in a way.
Right. So right now you're planning to do separate cards?
We're going to do the MMA side, the MMA in January. But along those lines, in the next year, we're hoping to combine them, do a show with the MMA and boxing.
Right. That's actually pretty popular. It's not as much of a trend as it was a couple of years ago when they first came up with the concept, but I think it's a good idea. And New England is, in general, I mean, it's like a fighting community almost. There's just so many different venues and people and legends from the area, like you yourself, you hold an event like anything that I've ever done through the Rocky Marciano Foundation, and you've got six or seven guys from the local area who are champion boxers or, MMA legends.
It's a big place. I mean, we get a lot of people that I love, like I said, we're passionate, we love to fight. That's what it is all about. I mean, and we just try to, some of us go into the sport, others go out in the streets.
Well, in my case, I mean, I only did amateur boxing, but boxing kept me off the streets.
Well, that's the sad part about what people think about boxing out there. You know, people don't really know about boxing. They always think about the brutal sport and, you know, people killing each other and so on and so forth. But people don't realize that it helps kids, you know, try to achieve something, try to achieve a goal, and things that keeps them off the street and it keeps them motivated where, you know, if they're in the streets and mentioned, they have nowhere to go but to go to see those dark alleys and hang out with the wrong crowd and so on. So, you know, I myself always try to send that message out that boxing is not what, you know, the brutality, what they think is more of the beauty that they see it's hidden behind it that helps these kids.
All right. Well, it channels aggression in a lot of ways, too. You know, some of these kids just are naturally aggressive, angry, and you get them in a gym setting and it's competition. They have an outlet for it, and I can't tell you how many times we've had fighters on the show, and I ask them what they love about fighting, and they say, well, you can hit somebody and not get arrested.
That's a big plus.
They totally found a way where they don't have to get in trouble for doing something that feels natural for them, so in a lot of people, it saved a lot of people from going to jail, saved a lot of people from getting killed. And just saved a lot of, criminal actors from pursuing that lifestyle.
And at the same time, it brings a great entertainment, too.
Right. Now, we haven't heard from our third co-host here, Psychic Tom. I know you've got to have a question.
Oh, a whole bunch of stuff. But, John, first off, I've just been waiting a long time just to congratulate you on an outstanding career. I mean, I know you had to work hard, and I know that you have to be so mentally tough because, you know, as the old cliche, boxing is three-quarters mental once you get the physical down and, you know, the physicality of it and the technique. A lot of this game is mental, and I think you really set an example for how you were able to bounce back from adversity because sometimes things don't go right for someone, and then that's the end of them, and you just seem to keep coming back, and I really respect you for that. Now, my question to you,
thank you.
Is, sure, and my question to you is, was there a time early on in your career when you had kind of like an epiphany, or like I call it like an aha moment, when you really believed deep down inside that you were very talented at this and you had the potential to be a world champ? Can you think of a moment when all of a sudden it's like, yeah, I know I'm good at this?
Well, there is a few moments in my career, actually. The first moment was when I, of course, I'm coming out of high school, and I'm already a father. I come out, and I'm already a father. And basically, I had to take my career seriously then. You know, that's the number one thing, taking care of the family. I had to take my career seriously so I could support for my family. And that was one thing. That was the first thing that basically got me motivated to basically train as hard and fight as hard. And then the second part, of course, everybody talks about the duel fight. That duel fight where, of course, I get caught and I get dropped. You know, that fight itself not only showed me that anything could happen in boxing, but at the same time, I had to be ready on that first bell on. And that was the second time in my life that I said, look, I had to talk to myself and say, I have to, as soon as that bell rings, I have to be ready to fight. I can't just basically dance around and wait to see what's going on, check out the other guy out, what he's doing. No, you just go out there and fight, and you keep fighting. And I think those two times in my life, I actually had to dig down into myself and actually question myself to see if I have the heart to keep going or not. I mean, and keep fighting and stuff like that. So I'm glad that everything turned out well for my to be, you know, and it could have gone back the other way. I mean, so I'm pretty excited that after realizing what in my life what went wrong and what I needed to do, you know, I managed to put my feet down and basically and just go out there and fight.
Well, you know, there's an old saying that adversity builds character. But then I've heard that adversity doesn't build character, it reveals character, or a lack thereof. And I think in your case, you know, a couple things go wrong, and it just showed the strengths you have and what kind of a man you are, what kind of a fighter you are. And I congratulate you again so much for coming back and just not letting anything get in the way of your goal. And I think that it's a good example for anyone in any area in life, not just the fight game. Just keep going. Just keep plunging on. And, you know, because nothing ever goes smooth for everyone. We all have problems. We all have setbacks. But, you know, you've really set a great example.
Thank you.
Sure. And let me ask you this. Was there any fight that you really were hoping you could have someday that you just weren't able to get it, to get the fight signed?
Well, we had an opportunity to fight Tyson, actually, and we were waiting around, and all of a sudden it never went through. That was one fight that I would have loved to have. And, of course, I would have loved to get that rematch against Tua. That never happened also. So, you know, things, you know, you can't, like I said, I can't live in the past. I need to keep moving forward, and that's the whole thing. I mean, that's what happened to me in my career. I kept moving forward, even though what happened in the last fight, I knew I had to do better. And I just, that's the key part. I mean, you just got to keep moving forward.
Right. Yeah, very true.
As far as, you know, people that you like to watch today and of all time, do you have favorite fighters of all time and people that are still like today?
I'm sorry?
Can you name any fighters that you really love to watch today and some of your all-time favorites?
You know what? Well, you know, right now I just watched the Mayweather fight. You know, of course, you know, there's no question that he wasn't not going to win. I mean, because the thing is that one of the back in the day fighters that my stepfather was a big, huge boxing fan, and you know, every time I took him to the gym, he always he used to talk about Boom Boom Mancini. He used to talk about Alex Aguayo, you know, those great fighters in that era. And you know, he used to say, "Oh, did this time around this fight, and did that in that fight." You know, that's the and those are the fighters that basically I keep hearing, you know, hearing their name. You know, but you know, me being I was like at least I started when I was seven. Being around that age, all I wanted to do was just watch cartoons. You know, and the thing is that, you know what I mean, is he was always mentioning these guys. And, you know, now, you know, I still watch cartoons. You know, I got a six-year-old now. So, you know, if I could escape and watch some of these boxing and stuff like that, you know, sometimes I feel, I don't know, I get too excited sometimes. I choose not to because I get too excited.
Now, how did you first get into boxing?
I was actually thrown into boxing. I mean, I was my mother came to live in the United States. You know, from Puerto Rico, she came to live in the United States, and I was at least probably 6 years old. Maybe, and then she met some a gentleman that like I said, he loved boxing. And as soon as he, you know, I was like 7, going around 8, he started bringing me up to the gym. And, you know, I didn't know what boxing was. I mean, I played a little baseball, you know, back in Puerto Rico, but that's all I did, basically, I mean. And boxing was something new for me. And, you know, he brought me to the gym, started teaching me the ropes. And, you know, I see him here once in a while. Yeah, I see him around the neighborhood once in a while, and I, you know, we talk to him. And the first thing he starts talking about, you know, who would have thought that, you know, back in the day at 7 years old, you'd be right now a world champion. I mean,
right? Yeah, it's interesting how stuff works out sometimes.
Yeah.
It starts small, but you never know. And sometimes it's the environment too. You know, it's. Obviously, like Tom said, it's a lot of it is mental, but like when I was out in Las Vegas and I went to a couple of the open workouts at the Mayweather gym, you kind of got that feeling just being around all those fighters who are there every day that it's a big-time environment thing with them. I mean, not only do you have
yeah.
the whole Mayweather family, all the uncles, all their experience, but you've got this big example right there and the champion, Mayweather. Himself out there, you know, setting the stage for everybody. And even the youngest kids there, it was this kid, they called him Cashflow, Lloyd Diaz, seven or eight-year-old kid, I think.
Him
sparring in the ring, just shadow boxing, and it's got like 50,000 hits on YouTube.
Yeah. That's the whole thing. I mean, if you know, things like that, you know, I mean, him, those kids being around that gym and any gym out there that has a great champ in that gym, any kids who go to those gyms, they get more inspired to do better. I mean, they get inspired to want to become champions. I mean, so that's the good part about it. I mean, when we have these gyms with some great fighters that are still around and they're still helping to keep the youth out there.
Yeah, it's kind of nice, too. You must know about this. And being called champ everywhere you go, it's kind of like being a governor. Even after you're governor, everybody's governor. So
it's one of the few things that you could actually be called for the rest of your life, in a way. I mean, you know, it's a former president, he's a former champ, yeah.
So what's your ultimate goal with this AFO and, you know, the promotional side of boxing and MMA here?
My goal is just to to I'm a fighter at heart. I'm one of the fighters. I mean, I never thought of myself as a promoter. So I'm more want to take care of these fighters. I mean, I know MMA is not that is not as paying a dollar a month as to boxing is. I mean, and I'm hoping to change that. I mean, I'm hoping to change that, make their because they're doing all. Of course, they have the blood and sweat in that sport also. I mean, so I'm hoping to basically create where they're actually making something, making an income out of it.
Yeah, I mean, we see a lot of, like, you mentioned Holyfield, in his case, it's not just, you know, still trying to find a fight, but he's also in a financial wreck of a state there. He's just had to sell his big mansion and got child support payments up the yin-yang he can't pay. And what's your secret to being able to save your money and not be in that kind of a position, like both Tyson and Holyfield found themselves in at one point?
Well, I guess I'll probably say that was, marriage is the biggest commitment you could probably ever do as a boxer. Yeah, I'm sticking to my second wife because I don't want to go down that same road. You know what I mean? Because a divorce it will definitely clean me out. So, you know, I love her to death. At the same time, I have to keep her even closer. So. You know, because you know, like anything else. I mean, Holyfield, of course, he has I don't know how many kids he has now, how many different wives he has. You know, all of them are just taking them to the cleaners. You know, it's stuff like that. I mean, the guy worked his heart out, basically, to make the money he made in his lifetime, and now it's all taken away from him because they just, you know, times that he felt in love. I mean, those times that he felt in love, he got involved with his ladies and stuff like that. All of a sudden, these ladies just taking every little bit of them. I mean, so, you know, that's the key part about some of these athletes that are losing a ton of money is sometimes it's all about what happens in their personal life.
Yeah, well, it's not only that, but the entourage, too. I mean, especially in Tyson's case. And then you can look at a guy like Kelly Pavlik, who was on top of the boxing world at one point. And it turned out for him, everybody wanted to buy him a drink. So it was people that he didn't even know kind of led to his downfall.
Yeah, the entourage is also it's also a big problem recently. I mean, but at the same time, the sad part is that it could help and it could destroy you too at the same time. It helps you because people start seeing someone coming by with a whole bunch of group behind them, and they want to know who that person is, you know, and so that's how he gets a free for visiting. But at the same time, these guys are nickel and dime, and you're going to start losing a ton of money.
All right. Well, you got any final thoughts or anything you wanted to add that we didn't talk about yet?
I just want to thank you guys for putting me on, and I'll definitely, like I said, the April, hopefully do something in January, and put on a great show out there, and hopefully to do boxing / MMA, and probably heading towards the summertime. You know, you're trying to stay busy nowadays.
Right. Cool. And how do people find you out there online,
You probably find me at QuietMansportsGym.com or AFOMMA.com or JohnTheQuietManRuiz.com. So, you know, different websites there that could probably find me. You know, and of course I got the gym in Medford, Mass. And it's a great gym. It's called Quiet Man Sports Gym. You know, anybody wants to come down and check it out, come down, check it out, and see, let me know what you think.
I don't know if it was in Medford, but I used to go to a South Shore boxing gym.
Yeah, South Shore, yeah.
But it was in
I forget what city it's on right now.
But I used to live right over there in Malden for a little while, so I'm familiar with the area, right next door. Medford. Community there. All right. Well, it's been great talking to you, and definitely wish you the best with that. I'll try to make one of the shows once I find out what's going on, and you know, we'll do whatever reps we can to promote it for readers and all that. And looking forward.
Thank you. I'll definitely keep you guys informed what was going on, and you know, I appreciate this opportunity.
Cool. Enjoy the Red Sox game.
thanks. I'll stay with you.
All right. Good luck, John.
Thank you.
Oh, looks like we lost Tony. I was wondering why he wasn't saying anything.
Look, Tony.
Hung up on him. He even gets to say goodbye. John didn't have too much trouble here.
Juanita.
Hey.
I
forgot you weren't even on, so I didn't notice.
Oh, wow.
Hung up with John. What was the last part you heard?
We were talking about him holding the very same title Rocky Marciano held, and then we didn't really get much further after that.
Wow.
I've been off for about at least a good 10 or so minutes.
Yeah.
Probably more than that.
Wow. Well, sorry about that.
It's okay.
So we just hung up with him, and we'll get him that picture that he mentioned.
Yeah,
get that out to us. Actually, we got to thank the guy who hooked us up with that, Bob Trigger. Full Court Press. He's hooked us up with this one, and also next week we're going to have Demetrius Andrade, thanks to Bob. Good guy. Met him in person a bunch of times. He's always at all these New England shows. So he's actually one of the first boxing media guys to also get into, you know, putting out stories and material on MMA, too. So that was very smart, you know, especially considering the climate in New England for that kind of material. And there's just so many different promotions on both sides, so he's doing well for himself. And Dennis always uses him whenever he can afford him.
Right.
For anything he's trying to promote. He's done all the Battle of the Bats stuff for Dennis, so we definitely appreciate his work, too. Anyway, we've got a couple interesting stories here to mention before we say see you next week. I know you had mentioned something about this last week, Lennox Lewis coming out of retirement.
Yes, I had seen something on Facebook about that. I forget the site that I reported it, but they were talking about a possible rematch 10 years later, almost close to 11 years later now, with Vito and Klitschko from River. Very exciting, bloody brawl from June of 2003. And then I also heard the name of Tyson Fury going around there, but it all depends on how his fight with David Hay goes. And even if Hay wins that fight, I think Fury would make a more reasonable fight because of the similar sizes. Where Hay is such a smaller fighter that even if he beats Fury, he would just basically, he would kill the whole thing. He would expose Fury as, you know, a limited fighter, which I think he's coming in is pretty damn close to him. But at the same time, I don't think Hay would have the size to match up with him. I think it would be good if Fury would win that fight and have maybe that type of fight occur in England and bring in a hell of a lot of money with that. British fighter, two giants, you know, pounding away on each other.
Well, it's funny because last week when we talked about it, we really didn't have a lot of background or factual information. We were just kind of all speculating. But now apparently the truth comes out here, and Lennox himself actually said he would come back to fight one of the Klitschko brothers, didn't specify who. But he says his price is $100 million.
Yeah, that's what I have seen also.
I think he did a mouth statement there. $100 million. And actually, this is coming from not just somebody coming up and suggesting it to him. It comes from an official offer that he got while attending Vladimir Klitschko's successful defense of his world titles against Alexander Povetkin. And that was for half of what he's now asking, $50 million. So now he's saying, well, yeah, I'll do it, but you got to know. And they're considering this. He's 48 years old, but he says that's his price tag. So he's obviously got to be semi-serious about it. And he actually told them he could be ready in 6 months, and he's in provisional training already. So maybe the world title will go back to Britain. Back to but anyway, he would, if he was able to beat one of the Klitschkos, he would surpass U.S. boxing great George Foreman, who was 48 when he regained the world heavyweight title. And if it takes him, Mr. Trainee is obviously going to be 49 by the time he gets in the ring.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is how close would he be to without Hopkins? Because Hopkins now has the title, he's fighting next week, but we're talking about a fighter to win a title. Obviously, you can't win a title that you already have, which, you know, he hopped on to fight next week against Karo Marai. He's not going to win the title, he already has it. So, with Lewis Plant, the record that Hopkins just broke from himself. Another thing about Bernard Hopkins, I don't know if you guys have heard this, I know Richie sent me the open media workout that he saw him yesterday, and, you know, I could, obviously couldn't go, you know, with my knee cap and everything. I didn't even get it in time. But it was funny, I went to work today, and I was like, guys, we screwed up, we all dropped the ball. Yeah, some women there. Some women. Huge boxing fans. So they love talking to me now. I'm sending them pictures of me in the room. Oh, my God, this is amazing. So I said, we blew it yesterday. And I said, well, we blew it. I said, we all should have called that sick. Why? I said, I don't think we got his media passes to Bernard Hopkins open workout. I said, oh, we got your media passes. Of course, I'm lying. Oh my God, are you serious? I'm like, yeah, dead serious. And oh, we should have. Oh my God, I said, yeah, all you had to do was take a cough. We would have got out of work.
Well, it's interesting because you talk about female boxing fans. And I watched that documentary the other night, No Mas. And I had
I never knew that
Christie Brinkley was a huge boxing fan back in that time period.
That's cool.
And she actually used to follow around all the boxers and take pictures for Don King, and she was very involved in the sport. I never knew that until I saw the documentary. And she was really good looking back then too. I'm sure she's
still,
I haven't seen her lately.
But
it was a good documentary. But you know, the feeling I had after watching it. Actually, I read a review where somebody, you know, gave Duran a bunch of rash shit for you know, using the same excuse year after year. But, I mean, at least the guy's consistent. He's consistently stomach cramps. I don't get why there's even a conspiracy theory or why people think he would be lying about that, because it makes perfect sense. I mean, his basic description of events was that, hey, I won the title, I beat Leonard, and then I put on all this weight because I felt like the king of New York. I was out there partying, drinking it up. And I think the story says, at one point in the documentary, said that he had to lose 10 pounds the Friday before the weigh-in just to make weight. And then after he made weight, of course, he ate like a pig.
He forced himself. I think they said he was drinking a lot of orange juice. Like I said, I didn't see the documentary, from reports I've read, I think they're saying, like, he was just, like, guzzling orange juice. And sometimes when you're really thirsty, especially if you're killing yourself to make weight, because believe me, I know this, sometimes you will get, like, a craving for a certain kind of beverage.
Right.
And I remember when I had weight back in 97, when I did the 15 pounds in just a matter of days, and I was so dehydrated when I found a scale, the one thing I did was, I grabbed some stick of water. First thing I did, I got up the scale. And I said, it tasted real metallic. And later, I grabbed my one-pound Gatorade take him out, and if they're not taking him out, they said, let's teach you, like, all the tricks in that iron. And when I went upstairs, I found a confession machine. Now, I knew I couldn't drink a whole lot because I had a pie that night, and I needed to get in the next day. So I couldn't, you know, putting on 20 pounds of water weight or 15 pounds of water weight because I'd be screwed. So I just went up and I got a can. It was like a cranberry juice. And that's what I was craving. So the next day, when I made the weight again, that's what I wanted, was that cranberry juice. That's what I was drinking a lot of. And I was like, fuck it, now I made the weight. And people don't understand. You know what? Anybody that wants to call it a conspiracy theory, try this. Even when you're at peak performance, 100%, get in that ring, having an athlete on the long line of Sugar Ray Leonard fighting you. Now, maybe he's not beating you up, but he's frustrating you. He's a good boxer. He's fast. He's elusive. He's hard to catch. Now your stomach's hurting. You're getting hurt. You know, you feel like you're going to regurgitate. And, you know what? And tell me how many people are just going to turn around and say, oh, yeah, I'll keep fighting. No bullshit. Most people wouldn't have to get the round. Most people wouldn't have to get in the ring. That's what's the last round without quitting.
Right. There's a couple other interesting things that one, he denied ever having said no mas. He said Howard Cosell made that up. He never actually said that. He didn't specify what he did say. But at the same time, you know, there was a part at the end where they're both in the ring down in Puerto Rico. There. Not Puerto Rico,
Florida,
wasn't it? No, this was Panama, yeah. This is present day. Old guys staring across at each other, you know, talking about this fight. And I was really pissed off because whoever the director was decided to only translate about two sentences that Duran spoke during this meeting. And all it said was something about him drinking hot coffee. So his whole explanation basically blurred through it. And
well, when I watched it, it really didn't do much to change my opinion of what happened, because I do believe the stomach cramps were there, and I also think that just maybe at some level, Duran intuitively felt that if he quits, that'll rob Leonard of the glory of the victory, because at the time, that rivalry was intense. I mean, it was, I'm sure you guys don't remember it, but you can read, and you know how Duran flipped Leonard's wife off in the hotel lobby, and I mean, there was a lot of bad blood there, and the very next day, every single headline didn't give Leonard the credit that he deserved for making Duran quit. It was like, Duran quits. This is a total mystery. Yes. It's bizarre. And it robbed Leonard of the glory so much that to this day, he said that was the one fight, win, lose, or draw, that was the one fight that he didn't have closure to. And I also think that Duran regretted it as soon as he did it. But, again, I agree with you guys. If it's not your night, you just know you're not going to get this guy. You're not ready for it. They waved a bunch of money in front of him. I think Leonard was brilliant to demand an immediate rematch. I think Leonard fought a brilliant fight. He deserved the win, but nothing really changed my opinion. I mean, I believe Duran, like you said, he just was saying, yeah, I was sick, I wasn't feeling good, but I think there was that little bit of psychology, and then I get these guys that to this day say, well, maybe it was fixed. Come on.
Yeah.
A detective would look at a crime scene and you start connecting the dots and you look at all the evidence to where he would potentially have some kind of a stomach cramp issue or
sure, you know. Sure. And I mean, as far as these conspiracies,
because
three people can keep a secret
and
two of them are dead, you know?
About it doesn't mean he wasn't experiencing it. At the same time, you know, obviously he was very frustrated. The seventh round was the most embarrassing round of the whole fight for him.
The bolo punch.
So it had to have been a combination of those two things to me, that, you know, he was so frustrated, he was physically unable to really match up to Leonard. And then on top of that, he had the physical problems that he's dealing with. So it's just a perfect storm of aggravation and ailments there, I think. There's no room for a conspiracy. I just don't see how people think. This doesn't make sense to me. How anybody would...
They just haven't thought it through.
Obviously boxing is not a sport where you want to be known as a quitter. But some of the best boxers who ever lived have quit on their certain point of their career because they've been in tough fights, and you never really know what that guy's going through until you've been in his shoes. And you also look at one thing that they did mention in the documentary is that he made up for that way more than anybody ever hoped for him to. And he never quit again in a fight, obviously, and he went on to fight some eps.
Yeah.
Of course, never got his revenge against Leonard, but... He got some titles after that, and he fought some pretty big names. And that actually was the first time I found out that both he and Leonard, their last fight was against Hector Camacho. I didn't know that before.
Oh, no shit. I didn't know that.
Camacho retired officially. Kind of funny. But one of the most enjoyable parts of that whole documentary was when Mike Tyson compared Ran to Charles Manson. I started thinking about it. I thought, geez, I got to look up these pictures of Manson to see if he's right. And oh man, when Manson was young, they did look almost exactly alike.
They looked a lot alike, scarily alike. The Ran was a scary dude back in the day with that beard and sneer.
Yeah.
He was one of those guys. Like after. That famous cliche after he put Ray Lampkin in the hospital, he right on national television, he says, well, if I had trained hard, he'd be going to the morgue. I mean, you just knew this was a guy that looked at this as something beyond a sport. I mean, he's a predator. He's coming after you. You know, it's just...
Yeah,
he was very scary. And you know, he's also the kind of guy that you wonder... What he'd be like in the street? I mean, most boxers realize it's a sport, and we don't go out and do stuff. But Duran, very unpredictable, very unpredictable.
Right. And I think what happened with the second fight too, a lot of it had to do with, like he said, you know, feeling like the king of New York after he beat him the first time, and he got the spoils. You know, he'd never made that much money before in a fight. His ego got built up a little too much. He had all his money, and he knew he was getting $10 million for the next fight. So, win, lose, or draw, you know he's going to be even richer, and he's going to have a lot more money to spend. But I still don't think he was really that conscious of, you know, what quitting would be. You know, what that would do to Leonard. I think it was more just frustration, knowing he's already going to get the money, and. Half of his commentary, I don't get that. You know, you're building up this whole documentary to the last moment when you're both in the ring.
I remember about Duran. We were just saying, you know, what would he do, like, especially you know, during his lightweight days, when he was destroying guys, and what would he like in his shoes, you know, how is he in the ring? You know, he's a scary dude. And I remember his first fight that he lost was Esteban de Jesus back in, early in his career, you know. And, right after he won the title, it was a non-title fight, and he lost his decision. And then they fought again a couple years later, and he stopped de Jesus. That was about 2 years later, and I think they fought a third time. I'm looking at it right now. They fought again. Years after that, and he stopped the Hastings again. He would defend the title, stopped again. And years later, when Dave Hastings, you know, it was a bit of rivalry, you know, especially he had to beat Duran. And when Dave Hastings died, I forget if he had 80 or I think it was 80, but I think it was something like cancer or something. And, you know, he was working away. He died in Duran's arms.
I mean, that's saying something. There's certain guys, you know, you can see that professional animosity away. And you can become very close. So that's the one, even Vinny Paz said that, you know, when we first walked the Rams, going to that first there was a lot of nastiness going on there. They were really saying things at each other, and it was nasty. And then they became such good friends that David Duran in his for a final fight. He invited Vinny to Panama for his 50th birthday. You know, it's just amazing how things turn like that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, too, that the Rocky Marciano statue dedication, I saw Vinny Paz on the field. I really noticed him because he was the only one who didn't take his hat off him for the national anthem. And I thought he was Roberto Duran. They've aged very similarly, I guess. Anyway, we've got to move on here. We've got another pretty interesting boxing story here. Of course, we all know how successful this last Floyd Mayweather Jr. fight was with Canelo Alvarez. $150 million in pay-per-view coffers alone there, revenue. Well, now it's the subject of a lawsuit. A guy named Austin Trout, I'm sure we're all familiar with him.
Yep.
He was supposed to be on that card, apparently.
Yeah.
And obviously for any guy on that card, that's a pretty big deal to be playing second fiddle to Floyd Jr. So Austin Trout actually filed a lawsuit against his former promoter, Greg Cohen. And it's an interesting case because I don't know how it's going to go legally. I haven't really looked into it that deeply in this article.
You're a legal guru.
I felt like nothing. But he's basically asked for a temporary restraining order and a permanent one. Hasn't made a claim for specific damages, for loss of revenue. Obviously, the potential for loss of revenue is pretty good, but he filed the case September 12th in Galveston County District Court and was removed to federal court. It's a pretty big deal. And this is all surrounding the original agreement between these two. Cohen was supposed to receive 20% of the profits in return for arranging bouts, which is a pretty standard contract between a manager and a boxer. In Cohen's case, he's the promoter, too. Trout will now have to prove that they were not under that contractual obligation at the time of the failed negotiations for him to get on the Mayweather card. Trout himself has not competed since April when he got his first pro career loss to Canelo Alvarez. And it seems like he's not going to be back in the ring until after this litigation. But the basic storyline behind this is that Cohen made a condition to Showtime that they'd have to negotiate with him and him only. And then they just basically said, screw you, you know, we're going to go with somebody else. So he basically pissed them off with his negotiation tactics to the point where they didn't even bother pursuing it anymore. Austin was obviously left out of the loop. So, you know, now he's resorting to the courts to go after what should have been there, I guess. So it's definitely the case worth watching. I'll try to stay on it. It's pretty interesting as far as my perspective there. I don't know if he has a shot to win, but it makes sense. I mean, they have a specific charge. I know they tried to hit me with when Zion sued, called interference with prospective economic. Last part is economic advantage, which basically means if you know there's a contract between two people and you interfere with it somehow to prevent the guy from having an advantage based on that contract. So basically the guy that had that could be charged with that for interfering with his opportunity to make money. So that's a viable charge I think that he could pursue already. but I'm definitely going to keep an eye on that one and keep everybody updated. I think that's pretty much for our major boxing news. Do you have any cards you want to talk about coming up this weekend, Tony?
Let's see if we got anything going on. Well, of course, next week we have the conference call, which was originally scheduled for this weekend. Bernard had the open lockout in Philadelphia yesterday, and apparently he's changing his nickname. Bob Mania. He's getting an alien mask ring. But, you know, B-Hop's crazy. You know, he says a lot of things sometimes. And
he's a little green man now, huh?
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking about it now. I think B-Hop's also, you know, playing some mind games here. Talking about his opponent, who obviously is not very well-known, Karen Blatt. And he's sitting there saying, yeah, I know about as much about him as you do.
That's interesting. Well, let me get to a couple of MMA stories here. The man-woman MMA fighter there, Fallon Fox, has lost her first fight. So Ashley Evans-Smith is, they're calling, relatively unknown here in this article, is the one who did it. Got a third round took out in the featherweight title fight during the Championship Fighting Alliance 12 event there last Saturday. So it proves she is, whether she's a technically a male or a female, she is human. That's how I would have ended that article. So, I don't know. I guess the controversy is going to die down now. Now that she's proven she can be beaten. Now, I know we barely touched on this last week, but Rusamar Parez and his disqualification there, his bonus, turned into him being thrown out of the UFC now. And this is a surprise to me. The number one thing that I have to be is when this happened initially, I know Joe Rogan was an announcer, it was Canadian because it was a Fox deal, but none of the announcers said anything about it at the time. I don't think it was brought up in the post-fight interview. I didn't see the post-fight interview, but, you know, obviously, Mike Pyle complained after he tapped his knee. Felt like it got pulled out. So that must have been a contributing factor to all these after-the-fact decisions. But in the heat of the moment, it did not seem that bad to me. As soon as the referee jumped in, he let go. And the guy was tapping so fast, sometimes you don't feel that. Sometimes you don't recognize that as a tap when somebody does that. You're supposed to kind of tap one, two, three slow. And obviously when somebody's pulling on your leg like that, you're going to be desperate to get them to stop. So maybe that had something to do with it. But Pal Harris is getting condemned here because he has a history of doing this type of stuff. Not only in fights, but in training. But in this particular case, I think they're overreacting. The $50,000 should have been enough. But then they totally throw him out of the UFC. And with that kind of black mark on his record there, it's going to be tough for him to find a new organization. Not only did they get the $1,000 fine, basically, but he got suspended by the Brazilian commission for, I think, like 120 days. So I think that's enough. I mean, he's never been punished officially by the UFC for this before, as far as I can recall. So why do this now and just totally throw him out? Doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, you know, the only thing I can think of is if, you know, someone's in front of a judge and they look at the rap sheet and say, well, obviously this isn't the first rodeo. That's not the first time we've been down this road. And I think that had a lot to do with it, Rich, don't you think?
Yeah. For his part, he what about that guy move? He said, you could criticize, but how about the stun gun? He said Dong Hyun Kim got the knockout of the night that night. He said, you know, he chased Silva to the ground, Eric Silva, and he landed one more huge big hammer strike before the referee tackled him, and nobody criticized that. It's actually kind of a good point, but you never want to be in that position to say, well, you know, what about that guy?
Almost as if two wrongs make a right. I mean, he's been known for that before, and as we all know, that the heel hook is probably the scariest submission. I mean, we could be talking about a career ender for someone. So it's the way it goes.
Well, that's his thing. You know, there's actually a controversy I remember in one of his fights where he accused his opponent of greasing up his legs so that he couldn't get the heel hook. But he always goes for it, and he gets it a lot because he's good at it.
It's just too bad it happened because he's, you know, like Mike Rio, you know, he's one of these one-note Johnnies that you know what he's going to do, and he's able to do it. I mean, just incredible, like Ronda with her arm bars. So I felt kind of bad that he did get hammered, but, again, I think I understand why.
I can understand punishment, but just throw him out of the UFC like that, it just doesn't make any sense. I guess maybe because they set the precedent with Bob Lee Sobral, but Sobral, it was a different submission. Granted, you know, like, could be a career under which Nestor somebody's name that later in the game, but you're twisted ligaments. But in Sobral's case, he actually kept a rear naked choke on until the guy passed out. And in that case, the referee was trying to pry his hands off the guy. It's a lot different from the referee just jumping in, and then as soon as you see the referee come in, you let go. This guy held on purposely. And he even said after the fight, the guy talked a lot of sense, so he wanted to punish him. So that was a case where it was deliberate. In this case, obviously, as far as Paul Harris claims, it was just a misunderstanding. So I think they should have treated it. It is what it is. Dana White is who he is, and that transitions us nicely to the next story. He's in the news this week about Fedor. Was interviewed about predicting who was going to win this big heavyweight fight at UFC 166. And he's, like I said, if Velasquez is going to stick to his usual game plan, he's going to come out the winner. His biggest advantage is that he can transition, he can switch from one phase to another. He's a thinking fighter. But about Dana White and his failure in negotiations to bring him to the UFC, he's got an interesting quote here. He says, "In my opinion, everything was in Dana White's hands because at that moment I felt like this guy, he just hates us, like personally to me. There are insults coming from Dana White all the time. There were many very loud things said, but for real, nothing happened. All talk." So, I actually wrote an article for opposingviews.com a couple years ago, and it was like Dana White's 10 worst moves, and one of my items was not signing Fedor. And my perspective was not because Fedor would have been the greatest thing ever in the UFC. I always thought signing Fedor is really big height of popularity that he was overrated. So I thought that Dana White's biggest mistake was not bringing him to expose him and to show the world that he wasn't as good as people made him out to be. Because that gave him the ability to go out there and beat more tomato cans to the point where somebody actually was able to beat him in Strikeforce. But, you know, the whole deal back at the time was complicated because they didn't want to co-promote with Emma. That was the breaking point for that UFC deal. But I would have done that if I was Dana White and just gone ahead and co-promoted just for the basic fact that for all those years they didn't have Fedor, everybody could point to Fedor and say, well, the UFC doesn't have the greatest fighter in the world. And Dana White had the opportunity to bring him over and prove that he wasn't the greatest fighter. That one of his fighters that he already had could beat Fedor, which would have made the UFC way more popular way before it got as popular as it has. So I thought that was bad strategically on his part. I guess Nador agrees with me. And speaking of Dana White and management of the UFC, we had a pretty interesting story here about Ben Askren. Bjorn Redney made some comments about his offer to the UFC to not invoke their matches if they wanted to pick Askren up. He's a free agent, and apparently the UFC hasn't even replied to that offer. Now, and the only condition that Redney said that he would have is the UFC would have to give Askren an immediate title shot, which makes sense. I think they've done this when they merged Strikeforce. They've had that situation where, you know, the guy's coming with a Strikeforce title. He should fight for the UFC title. And the same probably should go for this situation. But Redshirt, we'll see what they do. I've heard no response from them at all, which is unusual and an anomaly. I think it puts them in a difficult spot to claim the best fighters fight in the UFC. And he also says, I think that the matching rights issue is one that the UFC has made a huge amount of noise about, but the fact is that every single UFC contract has the exact same matching rights in it that our contracts have. There's no difference in the rights they have in terms of matching and the rights we have in terms of matching. They exercise them and we exercise them. I don't for a minute that that is the true issue. I think there is something else at play in terms of them either not wanting Ben or not wanting him to fight for their existing champion. They also pointed out the matching rights were an issue with Hector Lombard. They submitted a contract to us, he says, and we took 10 minutes to read it and decided we weren't going to match. Eddie Alvarez was a different situation. Decided to match, and now Alvarez is going to fight Chandler on a pay-per-view. In the Ben Askren situation, they are more than welcome to make an offer that we have an opportunity to match. If you don't want to deal with the matching rights, you're just disingenuous and an untrue statement. But if you don't, then if you're fighting your champion, I will walk away. We won't match anything, and I will just root for Ben. And he also says if they don't do that, then he's going to try to resign. If you want to fight the best welterweight in the world, you can come here to Bellator, work like a crazy bug on your wrestling, and see if you can stuff Ben Askren with takedowns. So, interesting. Or backward development, I should say. That about does it for my collective stories here for the week. We got everything. So did you find any big boxing events, Tony?
Nothing really that I'm going to talk on. My phone is literally about 10 seconds away from dying anyway.
All right. Well, we only got a few minutes left, so I do have a couple other little things to mention. 50 Cent, Decimus Promotions, just signed James Kirkland's in the news yesterday. And also, probably a little bit bigger news, Zana Judith and Polly Malignaggi are going to fight in a crosstown Brooklyn rivalry there at the Barclays Center. So it's going to be a real big New York-based event with a couple New York-based guys. It'll be a good fight. They both have pretty interesting styles that should work well against each other. Yeah, that's going to be a tough one to score, I think. A lot of jazz in that fight. So, I guess that's all I got.
You got two quick fighters. It can be a good fight. It can be an ugly fight. Judas at the edge in power. And he looked good against Garcia. You know, he showed some heart. So that'll be interesting to see.
All right, well, next week we're going to be talking to Demetrius Andrade, and we're going to talk to him about what he's got going on. And we want to thank our guest tonight, John Ruiz, who was not so quiet. He He's a great guest, and look, definitely looking forward to handles himself on the promotional side of things. And, I'm sure he'll kind of have the same mentality as Mike Tyson as far as the way he treats his fighters, having been a fighter himself. So, you know, it's interesting to me that I think Mike Tyson's a bigger MMA fan than Ruiz probably is. Probably knows a little bit more about it. He's been into it a little bit longer, but having a guy from the boxing world as prominent as he is, adapt to an MMA like this is pretty exciting in the New England area. Great for me. I'm definitely going to try to make it to some of his shows. So we'll keep an eye on that. We'll get Tony's picture over to him. Until next week, I guess that's all we got. Enjoy the rest of the
show. All right, guys. Let's enjoy the fights this weekend. Got lots of them. All right.
Have a good night.
Adios. Hasta la vista. Show no more.